Today on the Cooligans, the USMNT roster has been leaked by The Guardian. We talk all about it. Some snubs, some surprises. We break it all down.
Oh, my God. In the next segment, we talk to the one, the only, Javier Chicharito Hernandez. He is in the studio. He forgot his shirt. Wait till you see this interview. It's absolutely insane. And by the way, we ask him a lot of tough questions, and he answers a lot of tough questions. I didn't think this was going to happen on the Cooligans. I'm really excited for you guys to hear that. And then after that, I just came back from being at Fancy Free, hanging out with Spike Lee, Zoran Mamdani, and Jason Sudeikis as we watched Arsenal lift the trophy. I'm completely soaked in champagne. I had to go home and change my clothes. And then I came here to talk about segment three, Tottenham getting saved and West Ham getting relegated. What an absolute juxtaposition. That and more today on the Cooligans.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. A lot of news today. We got to go over the USMNT roster league. We got to go over the Premier League and all the championships.
Did you just say the USMNT roster league? Come on.
Leak.
Leak. I was like, there's too many things going on, Chris.
No, get your ears checked, Alexis. No, the roster league. But today's a hot show. Too hot.
It is super hot, actually. It is super hot.
Because today we are going to be joined in just a little bit in studio by Javier Chicharito Hernandez. What?
Right. Wait till you hear this thing. You're going to be like, wait a minute. What did they say to him before they started recording? Because he was up for this one.
Yeah.
He came in hot.
He's an interesting man, or as he would say, interesante, right? We talk about it all. Chicharito is the an analyst for Fox Sports during this World Cup in the United States. So we talk to him all about it. But today, let us start with the Premier League Championship Sunday. The Guardian just leaked the full USMNT roster. 26 names are on the list, and we got a couple surprises. Gio Reyna is in. Diego Luna is out. Some people are upset, but let's go through it right now.
This is the top topic.
Dude, Diego Luna, who you just did a commercial with, man, this is where I feel the most bad.
Oh, you feel bad. I said it on this man's pickup truck bed and had a full conversation about what it would mean for him to be chosen in this World Cup, assuming he was in a commercial where he depicted himself in the World Cup final.
He's in every, he's part of all the advertising. It's kind of wild. Even though Pochettino kind of teased at this a couple weeks ago. He said that just because players are in commercials and stuff, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be called up. But even that's, it feels like something you're supposed to say. And he was right. This guy is featured everywhere.
You thought that it was, that's what you're supposed to say. Turns out it was a direct shot at Diego Luna, who I feel terrible for because I think it was such an inspirational story. And also, every time he was on the pitch, he gave it his all. You know, he broke his nose. He did whatever it took. It makes you think, when he posted the picture of himself in the kit, and apparently that's what really pissed off Pochettino, was that, you know, he sort of promoted himself as a member of the team before being granted that opportunity. And by the way, he's not the only snuff we're going to talk about, snuff, I think. Yeah, but snub on the list. But when you see that, you know, it almost feels like he did nothing wrong. It feels like he did everything right. I mean, I guess I'm not Pochettino or part of that crew, so I couldn't tell you. But it feels like he did everything he was supposed to do, and he went above and beyond on the pitch. That guy's going to make it.
So Diego Luna had he wasn't like ready at the beginning of the season. I don't know if it was because of injury. I saw Taylor Twellman talking about this on MLS on Apple TV on Saturday. He was mentioning that I don't think he was fully fit for the beginning of the season. I don't know how accurate that is, but if he's reporting that, there must be some truth to it. But even if that's the case, Diego Luna still has had a strong start to the MLS season. So it's kind of surprising because it's surprising from a recency kind of bias kind of a thing, because he seems to be in good form. For me, it's not too much of a shock because I'm thinking about the Gold Cup last year. The leading up to the final against Mexico, he had a good tournament. He scored, I think, 2 goals. He was fairly decent and contributing a little bit. But then that final against Mexico, he couldn't even touch the ball. He was just completely lost. And not to say that was just him, but he had a bad game. Like he didn't really step up in like the tough moment. So I kind of understand Pochettino's thinking here, but I think the drama here is like when you just look at it on paper, Diego Luna had way more minutes and more goals and more goal contributions than Gio Reyna. So that people are kind of pitting the two when
the Gio Reyna conversation is just a separate conversation. I mean, that is, you know, and it's loaded with asterisks, and I get it. There's going to be people that understand where you and I are coming from. Or maybe it's just me. I'll let you speak for yourself. And maybe there's going to be people that just never understand where I'm coming from and where apparently Mauricio Pochettino's coming from. But there's just, and maybe it's, you know, we're looking back 3 years ago and saying, hey, maybe you could do it again like you did it in Nations League. But there is magic in this kid's boots. And it shocks me to suggest that we would leave him home just because he couldn't find a way to get on his club team earlier. You know what I mean? It just seems... Yeah. Wrong. He's getting minutes now. Certainly not a lot. And it doesn't give me a lot of confidence that Gio Reyna can play a full 90. I have zero question whether Diego Luna can play a full 90. But Gio Reyna seems to be a completely separate conversation. And I'm usually not one for that. And in this case, I've always kind of given him that grace. And it just is what it is. But I'm shocked that Tanner Tessman didn't make it. I know there was a bit of an injury worry, but it seemed like that kind of had cleared. So I guess I was okay with it. Certainly by the time the World Cup starts, Aiden Morris, who got a lot of minutes against Belgium and Portugal, that felt to me like, well, this is a bit of a preview of what we're going to get in the World Cup. And clearly, absolutely not. And the kid plays tons of minutes for Middlesbrough. I mean, he's a mainstay. I'm shocked that he didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at USMNT takes. This is disgusting to take to the World Cup. I'm not going to lie. We couldn't really do better than this in referring to the midfielders. And I don't know. I mean,
if you don't know who the midfielders are, by the way.
This is not the full list.
It's not the full list, but the picture he has up there is Tyler Adams, Sebastian Berhalter, Weston McKennie, and Christian Roldan. And I have a feeling he's bringing up the two MLS guys. Yeah, that's the purpose of his topic, not the not Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie who are in top form.
Right, the full list. I mean, another name that's probably a little bit of a surprise is Alejandro Zendejas, which, you know, more of a winger. This is the problem with Diego Luna is that, like, is he, where does he exactly play? Like, he's, you know, pretty much an attacking midfielder, but you have Malik Tillman and you have Pulisic and you have, I mean, there's just players kind of ahead of him in that spot. And then he's versatile enough to play other positions, which a lot of these guys can play in those other positions. So he's kind of like the odd one out. And it's like you lose out on a little bit of that heart that we saw with the broken nose and you know, but immediately reminds me of Ricardo Pepi last World Cup, all thought he was going to be called up, and he just was the kind of guy, like he was just the odd one out. And this time around, it's Diego Luna. So it's a bummer, but by 2030, I would expect Diego Luna to be ready and prepared and would be a part of that crew. But yeah, I feel bad. I mean, if people haven't seen, Alexis is in a Carl's Jr. commercial with Diego Luna, and it's incredibly like charming and sweet, and what a great story and inspiring. Yeah. And then boom, we get this.
Carl Jr. or Senior didn't get called in. I mean, neither did I. Everyone took an L in that commercial, bro. It's messed up. By the way, shouts to Carl Jr.
Is this the reverse Cooligan's bump?
Oh no.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Taylor Twelman here.
Okay, USMNT roster reported by Guardian. No Tessman or Morris is short-sighted to me. Adam's injury, then why? Yeah, this is a few people have been talking about this. There's no real holding mid per se. I mean, maybe Christian Roldan is kind of that. Maybe.
Hey, by the way, can I give you your flowers? You said Christian Roldan would make this World Cup roster. I did not believe you. I didn't want to believe you. And I got to say, Christian, I'm upset that you're right, but you are correct. So please take your lap.
I'm telling you, you're going to, you know, everybody hates to see MLS guys there. But Christian Roldan, I think, again, offers a little bit of veteran leadership that some of these young guys, they, you know, like we had Tim Ream on the show, right? And everyone's critical of Tim Ream and his age and whatever. But there, sometimes you just need that, like, kind of that guy that is sort of a coach on the field, right? The coach himself cannot step on the field to give anybody instruction and give anybody motivation or encouragement and do really all these things. And sometimes you need players that can offer that a little bit. I'm not saying Christian Roldan is better than guys playing in Europe or whatever, but I understand why Pochettino feels like he needs a player like that on the roster. But not having, like, I think a shock to me is Tessman. I said this a few windows ago. I said, I don't know if you need Tanner Tessman and Aiden Morris, because I think they pretty much offered the same thing. And Aiden Morris is, you know, he played in the championship playoff yesterday, and he was pretty bad, man. I mean, really not. I have to look at the stats. I think Aiden Morris had the most possession, the highest percentage of possession of anybody on the pitch. He played the entire game, had all this possession, couldn't really connect passes, no line breaking passes. Like, he reminded me of, like, when we would remember Darlington Nagbe have a bad game. Like, we know he never lost the ball, but never really, like, sent in a pass that opened up a winger or another midfielder or a striker.
Not
to,
really,
like,
his role.
Not really his role
at Middlesbrough. So it's kind of hard for me to hold it against him, but I could see him not having a dynamic game. Sometimes he just does a really good job of holding the ball and shuttling. Yeah, shuttling. But that's his thing. You don't get the ball away from him, and he tends to make a safe pass. And those are the guys that are supposed to do something with it. You know what I mean? He's not supposed to be the magnificent one. And in a way, that's kind of what you want from him, and that's why you call him in. And I'm a big Aiden Morris guy, and I think he's doing a great job in the championship, and I'm kind of confused as to why he's not in there. I don't agree that he does the same thing as Tanner Tessman. I could understand why you would have him on the team, would be for equal things. I think Tanner Tessman's not only extremely good at breaking up an attack, which I don't think Aiden Morris is, that's not the top of the list for Aiden Morris. You know what I mean? I find myself thinking about more of him as holding onto the ball and making that safe pass, shuttling the ball forward, if you will, not, you know, finding, like, you know, pulling strings or whatever. Tanner Tessman, I also don't even really see in that manner. I see him as the guy who's going to absolutely stop any attack coming forward. He's safe with the ball, so that's similar to Aiden Morris. But what he can do that no one else in this midfield can do is slide back and be another center back as all your fullbacks are bombing forward. So I'm really confused. If we want to play the way we've been playing and the way Pochettino has been asking this team play, why would you not bring a guy that creates that additional cover? And if you're not going to have Tanner Tessman, it seems to me like maybe Johnny Cardozo could kind of play that role. So none of them? You got none of these guys?
Obviously, Cardozo got injured late in the season. He got injured, I think, in the Champions League game. And that's been a whole other story that's fairly interesting, where he chose to get surgery rather than to play injured on an injured ankle. And Hercules Gomez told his story about how he came back early from an injury, and he still, his knee doesn't feel the same ever since doing that. So I offer, like, you know, a decent amount of sympathy and understanding of why Cardozo chose to get that injury and not take that risk, right? But it is risky. It is risky. They aren't, you know, obviously, if Tyler Adams gets hurt, and Tyler Adams also does not do the same thing that Aiden Morris and Tanner Tessman do, but my belief is that Pochettino is, like, I'm not going to ask my midfielders to drop in and play center back. Like, that's basically the mentality,
which I
right?
get. But if you're going to do that four at the back, that turns into three. But then you've got, you know, if Alex Freeman is playing at any point, he's probably going to venture forward a little bit. You know what I mean? Especially because he has the athleticism to get back. It seems to me like even in a pinch, having someone in the midfield that has a lot of skill sets. And I mean, we're reading USMNT Otaku here saying it's not entirely clear why he was admitted and that the muscle injury wasn't a concern. So there must be something else. If you have a guy who can do those things and slide back and be that additional center back, which, guys, we're probably going to be under attack sometimes, especially if we get into the knockout rounds. You're going to be playing some big nations. We're going to have to be able to bunker down for a little bit. I'm really confused as to why a guy like this. You could give me a million excuses. And I also want to go back to something you said that I know people don't like having MLS guys. There's people up in arms that Diego Luna isn't on this list. And those are guys that normally don't want MLS guys. So I don't think it's MLS guys. I think it's Christian Roldan. And I don't think Christian Roldan is a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. But bringing in a guy that doesn't do something fantastical, you know what I mean? Bringing in a guy from MLS that's not a young guy with that's using this as a springboard to get into Europe. This is a guy who's been there his whole life. Most people are going to think, like, why are we doing this? Odds are he's not capable in that level when it starts to get fast and when it starts to get big nations.
We can say that, but then, why does he get two assists in the games against, Uruguay and Paraguay, right? Like, it's difficult.
I'm not saying that. You know, I'm saying that seems to be the conversation.
I understand. I mean, look, nobody's looking at this roster and being like, we got it. We good. Let's go. Maybe quarterfinal at the least. No, this is going to take this is a roster that tells me it's like, hey, we're not going to be the best out there. You know, a little harsh truth. We're not the best out there, but we're playing at home. We're going to show a lot of heart and we're going to do our best. That's and maybe a miracle can kind of happen, but this isn't a terrible team by any means, but yeah, we're looking at USMNT. Only says 28-year-old Club America attacker Zendejas is World Cup bound for Mauricio Pochettino's USMNT, one of the most dangerous forwards in all Liga MX. He just played 139 minutes in 6 appearances for USMNT under Pochettino. It's a big opportunity. Speaking of another one, I think the goalkeeper situation is also interesting, right? All three goalkeepers are from Major League Soccer. I understand Matt Fries. I understand Matt Turner. Chris Brady, who has 0 caps for the U.S. Men's National Team, is going to the World Cup. That is a bit of a surprise when there's other goalkeepers that have had more experience with the national team. And not to say Chris Brady is a bad goalkeeper. Just it would have been cool for, like, I think that third goalkeeper to maybe be someone with a bit more history, a bit more of a connection to the other players and camaraderie and all this other, you know, like when Sean Johnson was the third goalkeeper at the last World Cup. It's like you want that veteran presence. You understand it kind of maybe offers something that we don't necessarily see. So yeah, I mean, that's being nitpicky, but we're looking at, you know, every single spot here is significant and important. So look, outside of that, it's a couple surprises, but I don't know how you feel. Nothing here is like putting me in a place where I'm like, oh, Pochettino has no clue what he is doing, and or there's some obvious wrong decision. I think this is a pretty solid roster.
That's not what I'm getting from it at all. What I'm getting is some, you know, like everyone has like their guys, and I think Berhalter, we kind of knew it was like the young guys, and those were his guys, and he was going to call him in. Giassi Zardes was another one who was kind of a consistent player under Greg Berhalter, and you know, Bruce Arena had his guys. Everyone has their guys. Jurgen had his guys. So I think, you know, like anyone else, Poch gets a chance to have his guys. I think some of them are shocking. I think the people that are shocked about Zendejas in particular aren't watching Liga MX. They don't understand that he's one of the most, you know, one of the best informed attackers or wingers in Liga MX. I believe he has 12 goals, if I'm not mistaken. 12 goals and 12 goals and 7 assists for Club America, which is a big club to be a part of and play consistently. There was a time where every time he put on the U.S. men's national team shirt, he looked terrible. He's turned that corner. He looked good the last time he played for the U.S. men's national team. So I'm not too worried about Zendejas. He's the kind of forward that if he's in form, you're like, I'm glad this guy's on my team. So I'm cool with that. Chris Brady, I don't know if you remember, Brad Friedel brought his name up when we interviewed him a few months ago.
I do remember.
And we were like, bro, you're smoking something. That guy, he's a kid. He's not going to no World Cup. I don't even know if he could get a ticket. You know what I mean? And yo, he's booked himself a PJ. You know what I mean?
Brad Friedel called Pochettino and be like, bro, get my guy on there.
I don't know
there,
if you heard me on the Cooligans.
I've been bigging up this man. I feel pretty confident, especially in, well, you know, we haven't spoken about the defenders here, but in Chris Richards, great to hear that he is going to be okay, because it was a bit of a panic because he's not playing in the Europa League final. Not Europa League. What conference league final? The defender Richards, Jedi Robinson, Serginho Dest, Alex Freeman, Austin Trusty, Tim Ream, Mark McKenzie, Max Arfson, Joe Scally, and Miles Robinson. Joe Scally is a bit of a surprise to me, because but Borussia Mönchengladbach have been abysmal this season. So to even, you know, two players, Reyna and Scally, to both be on the World Cup roster, I think they just highlight the lack of depth and experience at the right back position for Pochettino and just for U.S. soccer or USMNT. Because Joe Scally, I think the he's on this roster because he is so versatile. I think even in 2022, we were at the roster reveal in 2022, and we were like, Joe Scally, we were completely shocked. But he is versatile. He can play right back and left back. So there aren't, just to have that as an option, I think is why he gets called up. But I'm curious.
Versatility seems to me to be the reason why a lot of these players were chosen.
Outside of goalkeepers, who do you think doesn't play at all? Does anybody stands out?
I mean, there is a question whether Gio Reyna will get on the pitch. I love the guy in the last...
I don't think that's a question.
You think he will get on the pitch?
100%. 100%.
I mean,
because
here's
there's no
my
holding
worry.
Mid. You just need somebody to maintain possession a little bit, and he might be the closest to ask to do that.
If what we're hearing is true, and that the reason he hasn't been given many minutes with Borussia Mönchengladbach is because he's had this sort of muscle strain that hasn't gone away, and they've been slowly bringing him back. If that's true, then I got to look at the last 5 or 6 matches. He's had 18 minutes.
He's played in the
minutes.
Last 5 matches. Reyna has
Hold
played
on.
The last 5 matches.
Yeah, I'll tell you. 18 minutes in one, 13 in the other, 20 in the one after that, 32 and scored a goal against Augsburg. Good for you. And then 23 minutes. That's not, if you add that up, that's not 90.
Okay.
This guy's not starting.
No, he's not starting. He'll play.
And Gio Reyna also doesn't really seem to me like a super sub. He seems to me like the kind of guy that, although he did look great in Dortmund every time they brought him in as a sub, he scored. But why bring in a guy that's not 90 minutes match fit? I'm not 100% sure.
A lot of risky choices here.
What does his mom know about Pochettino and his wife? That's the real question.
There you go. How about we move past it? No, I guess maybe not.
Not on the Cooligans we haven't.
I wonder. I mean, it seems like maybe Sebastian Berhalter maybe left out a little bit, maybe not get a lot of minutes. Austin Trusty, I can see maybe not getting a lot of minutes.
Austin Trusty's going to play. And by the way, you didn't give me my flowers. I said Austin Trusty was going to make the World Cup squad, and he 100% made it.
I didn't say that he was not going to make the World Cup roster. That's why I'm not giving
you
your flowers. You
said he would, and you were right. And now I said Austin Trusty would, and I'm right. We're both right.
Oh, okay. So that is the barometer.
That's it. That's all that matters. I'm looking at the roster now. I think maybe Arfston, maybe we don't see him really sniff much. Of the pitch,
I think he's also pretty versatile. I think he might get on, especially with Jedi Robinson coming back from an injury. I could see him getting on the pitch a little bit. Yeah, there's some from a tactical point of view. Hopefully, you know, we're not getting blown out. We're basically, you know, Pochettino's like, all right, let me give some a few guys some minutes. Like, Chris Brady, we need a holding mid. Have a little fun out there. I hope that's not isn't the case.
Yeah. How'd you write? Buddy, get in there at goalkeeper. Let's see what you got, tall boy.
The main thing for me, there isn't specifically a player on this list that I'm like, they should 1,000% not be on this list. I don't really feel that at all. And even though the exclusions, I kind of understand them. I think this is kind of, as far as tactically and how Pochettino wants to set up, I think this is the best available players for him. Doesn't necessarily mean we're gonna knock it out of the park and do really well, but I'm not gonna say I'm necessarily happy with it, but I'm good with this this roster, and I'm looking forward to seeing the U.S. in the World Cup, man. It should be entertaining, to say the least.
I said the only thing missing is, like, give me a heart and soul player. Who on this team? Maybe Weston McKennie. Who's going to be that Diego Luna that everybody roots for? Everybody wants to see do well. Everybody's going to get up off their feet when they score and not just expect it.
Every player, punch yourself in the nose before the first whistle.
It's really all you got to do is just break your nose, dog.
Break your nose, bro. That's for Luna.
Oh, my God.
I really can't believe... This man is sitting right in front of us.
And also, he is dressed like he's about to do a R&B video. It's absolutely incredible. I can't believe this man is here.
I think he's going to be on the cover of Vice City.
Bro, I thought a saxophone was going to follow him in this building. I am so insane. I can't believe I'm joking around. I am so insanely honored that this guy's here. As an Arsenal fan, I hated when this man was at Manchester United.
And you're wearing full Arsenal gear.
Well, whatever, we just won. So good time to talk about it with this man. Haslefield, 22 years. You're part of the reason we didn't win. As a USMNT fan, I can honestly say this. There's very few players on the Mexican national team that I absolutely love. This is one of those players. I love this man, bro. I cannot wait to talk to him. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't believe he's here. The one, the only, Javier Chicharito Hernandez.
Thank you, guys. How are you guys?
We're good. I'm doing pretty good. How about you, bro?
You're happy, right?
I am so happy right now.
Well, you wait 22 years, I did it in 3 years.
I know. We're going to cut that out.
No, we're going to leave the closing. I need to keep that one.
Fair.
The heat started quick.
He came in. Are you going to make fun of my suit? Watch what I can do. I got jokes too.
Chicha, this is, look, it's an honor to have you in our studio here in New York. I mean, one of our most favorite moments, I think, ever of doing our show was when we were in Minnesota for MLS All-Star and we were interviewing you. And then your obviously good friend, Carlitos Vela, joined in, and you guys, and we had this moment. I have these photos of all four of us
having so much fun.
And it's truly one of the most incredible moments. One of those things of like, I cannot believe that this is happening right now. And now you are in our studio. And again, I'm going to say, I cannot believe this is happening right now.
Thank you.
In fact, here's Carlos Vetno.
Does it again. But this is super, this is incredible. I mean, you are in an analyst role. You are now stepping onto our turf.
An analyst for Fox Sports, the exclusive rights holder of the World Cup.
So let's start there. I mean, we were talking a little bit before. This is the first time you're doing something like this. Yeah. And when it comes to expertise, I mean, fewer people know more than you when it comes to this game. But what are you looking forward to in this new role, in the media now?
Yeah, to feel the experience, guys. One of the things that make me decide to do all of this, it was because I haven't done it before, you know? So I want to see how it feels. And now that you describe it, for example, that I'm going from, let's say, from this to here, I don't feel that, man. I've been doing so much interviews about careers, about games. Now it's going to be a more specifically that I'm not going to speak about something that I'm involved. That's the only difference.
Yeah.
Because in the past, I speak about football as well. I criticize some other things. Now I'm going to speak about what is happening in certain games. In the past, I was playing the game and then maybe later speaking a little bit or more about that game. Now I'm going to speak about that game without being there. And something as well that I want to see how it feels, because in my brain and in my mind, it's like, I don't have to speak differently than I'm speaking now or when we met in Minnesota or in the past, right? I just want to speak about football, how I see, how I feel it. Because then sometimes what is happening, it's in my country at least, there's a huge separation between the players and the media, and they both need each other to the same goal that it should be the benefit of the sport, right? Not only the benefit of someone. So for me, it's just like, they've been keep asking me, how does he feel the transition, right? I'm still a current player though. I haven't retired. Mm-hmm. But the transition, I'm like, I don't understand which transition they're talking about, right? I'm still wake up at the same time.
Yeah.
And imagine that I have a team and I was current playing and then I still have this opportunity. I'll be doing the same. No, I'm talking about football, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't need to be that different.
Right. You're not doing the NBA finals.
No. No. Yeah. I know. I understand. It's a huge thing, but I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes we put so much unnecessary pressure and thoughts that they are just, like I said it, unnecessary, right?
Right.
Like,
as someone who makes a lot of mistakes talking in a microphone, I think you're right.
But that's the thing. If they're looking for perfection, I'm not the candidate.
Yeah, me neither.
No one, right?
But it's funny because, you know, like 2 years ago, I played in TST, the tournament. And as a media member, I played in that. And people were asking me, what's the transition like? I'm like, it's hard. It hurts so bad.
Yeah, but I think talking about something and then doing it,
right.
I think it's completely different than doing something and then talking about
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
Even though they're two different things. Like I said in an interview, I was judged by how I did with my feet. Now I'm going to be judged of what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Right.
But in the end, I'm going to keep being judged. So what needs to change? Nothing. Yeah. I mean, I tried to be as authentic as I was in the field and I'm going to try to do the same outside.
And this is my question because you are truly a great for Mexico. And you know what I mean? You're one of those players that, I don't know that what you did on the pitch and what made you great is something that you can teach other people. There was an instinct to the way you played, you know, fox in the box, poacher, whatever you want to call it. There was a way you played, especially at Real Madrid, where I'm like, you can't teach someone how to be in that spot at that moment. How are you going to analyze? Because what are you going to spend most of the time going, I could do better than this?
Those are the things. But those are the things that I hope I can have the eye at the moment and then I can get those things and then I can translate it, of course, right? It's like the same with football. I hope I can be in the right place at the right time and then score. So in the World Cup, regardless of how my involvement is going to be, that is analyzing before, in the halftime and then afterwards and then in other programs, is going to be try to do that, right? I mean, I'm not here to say who's the best, who's not. I'm here to try to say when I'm seeing it, that it could be very important and there's something that is adding to the conversation because it's not only myself with a microphone.
Right.
It's a conversation with another teammates, let's call it. It's a team group. You know, the host, the analyst, and then the commentators are over there. So it's like it's a show. It's a complete show that we need to deliver so that people want to come and keep watching to us.
The difference between us saying something on TV and you saying something on TV is that you might be saying something and then one of your teammates or friends on the Mexican squad might be like, Chicha, hermano, tranquilo.
No, but that's the thing. I think that's something that I'm very intrigued and I wanna see how I do and how it goes, right? Because I don't believe it's like that. The separation, it doesn't really exist. I'm going to keep talking as a football player. Why I need to be analyst for one? I will say the same if I was with cleats or without cleats.
Yeah.
Your body needs to be more in the left. Or you know what? You couldn't handle the pressure. It's normal. There's more pressure in a World Cup than in a normal friendly game with Mexico. What's the difference saying that with a suit like this or with a Mexican shirt? Nothing, right? So that's the difference that it's not that I want to prove that there's no difference. That's what I want to feel. And honestly, if I can portray it, that there's no difference. I'm not going to be the guy saying, oh, this is the worst game ever from Mexico. Yeah. Then clicks come. Well, no, I don't want to do that. That's not even helpful to the tournament, to the game, to the players. Respect. We need to respect the sport. Because without the sport, we wouldn't be here. Literally, it's the sport. The sport is the boss. Then we follow it.
Do you remember a time where you were playing and somebody was hypercritical and you had their phone number? You're like, I could text this
dude
right now.
It doesn't need to be hypercritical. That's the situation. When someone says, you miss one of the most important chances, true.
It is what it is.
But then if they start saying, he's one of the worst Mexican players ever, that's another conversation.
Yeah.
Because to be at that level, that's completely out of proportion. Yeah. Why people say it? Because they get clicks, they get views, they get their ego. I don't want to be the greatest analyst ever. I, I'm I'm who I am. They look for me because what I did, and they think I can add something to that. Then what? Then if praises come, in results come, that will be amazing, right? If we are the most viewed, people ask me to keep going. It's amazing. But imagine if they say, no, you are not good for this job. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Life goes on. Hey. I'm not attached to nothing. It's like, we are going to be dust. Yeah. All of us, eventually.
I love it.
Yeah. No, eventually. Right. So who cares? You're right. Who cares if I score 50 goals and who cares if I say something that I shouldn't say on TV? Like, who cares?
Sure.
So that's the thing that I want. And as well, that's why I decided to do it as well in English rather than in Spanish.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny. It's interesting because, like, you know, that attitude is obviously, I think, healthy, right? Because, you know, but I'll be honest. When I see, you know, you're playing at Chivas, missing chances, missing penalties. Like, I scroll on my TikTok and it's not people being like, oh, we're all going to be dust. It's people so mad at you.
Mexico is another level when it comes. Not another level. I think a lot of places in the world are like this. But as Americans, you know, if Christian Pulisic misses a big opportunity, we're talking about it. Yeah. Some of the media people are talking about it. But you go to a deli, people aren't yelling about it. You go to a pizza shop, people aren't screaming about it. You miss a penalty when you play Fred 3. Everybody is talking about it.
But that's the beautiful thing about media that I'm figuring it out. And even though that I don't want to say that I'm now in the media because I've been in the media always just different positions, but I'm in the media. It's that one thing is describing what happened. And the other thing is, what do you think when you describe what happened? Yeah. You can describe my ups any moment of the time. Then, with all due respect, I don't give a about your opinion.
Right.
I hope the players or whoever thinks the same. Yeah. One thing is saying Christian Pulisic missed this chance. The other one is saying my opinion of like why he missed the chance. Right. That's why I want to do it as clear as possible. I'm not saying that I'm against the media or I'm in favor of the media. I'm not against or in favor of no one. What I'm in favor is about this sport is giving us all these opportunities and this World Cup to enjoy.
That's awesome.
And then we'll see how it goes. I might come back here and you will tell me, hey, Javier, you said you weren't doing that. And I'm one of the hypercritical guys, right? Yeah. Or the opposite. I've been laughing the whole time. Like, I don't know how it's going to develop. Mm. What I think is I want to respect the football. And without the players, we are nobody's guys. All of us. Okay. So the players are the most important thing over there. Then we just transmit what the players are. Then if there's characters that they want to have the attention, they want to do their characters, it's up to them. For me, the sport always is going to prevail.
Okay. As someone who played for a club team and obviously on the national team, what is the difference for the players walking into a World Cup? How much stronger is it? More pressure? Is it maybe you're not as comfortable because you don't play with these guys as often as you do your club team? How much different is it playing in a World Cup or playing for your national team?
No, it's completely different. It's very different. It's very difficult for me, to summary everything because it's every 4 years. You spend a lot of time. So sometimes, for example, my first World Cup, I didn't play any qualification game. And then just 1 month before, I was doing so amazingly that I went to the boat and then everything happened. And then there were others that, for example, in the process in Brazil, were almost not able to qualify. And then we qualify by beating New Zealand. I think it was in a qualification, repechaje famous that we called in Mexico. And then I thought I was going to be able to play and I didn't play. And then in Russia, I was the perfect one because I was the whole 4 years playing a lot, then the starter, then I finished it. So I lived the different and they all feel different because of how I get there. So it depends. If you're the captain, it's different. If you're the third goalkeeper or fourth, it's different. If you're Neymar, it's different. If you are Cristiano, it's different. If you are Pulisic is different, but if you are McKinney, is different. Like, it's the perspective of everyone. Now, whoever handles all the noise around in their like benefit or in the best way, they have more chances to win. That doesn't mean that the ball is going to go behind of the net.
Yeah.
Right. No matter if you do the best things, that's the beautiful of this sport. There's nothing predictable. You can practice, and then you see someone missing a penalty. You know, it happens.
Yeah. Like, a couple years ago, we went to El Azteca and we saw the U.S.-Mexico qualifier. It was the 0-0. But one of the things we remember so vividly there, and that was the first time I saw, I think you as well.
Yeah.
But as soon as we got there, all we heard was like, fuera, tata, fuera. Like immediately. But ball's not even being kicked. Like clearly, the criticism and the spotlight is really, really there when it comes to Mexico, the team. I mean, we've seen Raul Jimenez also talk about like being frustrated sometimes with the fans and being booed and stuff like that. What do you think of like where going into this World Cup, especially hosting it for the Mexican national team, how they're going to do and dealing with that noise?
Yeah, that conversation I think is very difficult, and it's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's like when you find, no matter if you're a player, a fan, a commentator, whatever, a sport director, if you're not willing to see where you can improve, there's no conversations. And what people don't really understand, but it's only in their convenience, no matter in which country, this is no matter even Mexico, it's not countries, it's in the football world, it's like they don't understand that support is when things are bad. You don't support someone when he's doing good. They don't understand that support comes in bad moments.
Yeah.
It's there. Study it. Support in bad moments. In good moments, you don't support. You celebrate.
Yeah.
So in the world, we don't know how to support. That's why they say that, I don't believe, but they say, and I heard in Mexico and a lot of people, that they say the fans that they support the teams that they've never won nothing are the best supports, because of course they don't celebrate and they're still there and they support them,
I'm an Everton fan. I know exactly what
you know
like.
What I mean? You haven't won a Premier League. You know what I mean? But you feel, but you are not going to be as critical as a Man United fan.
Totally.
Why? Because Man United won.
There. Yeah, they've been there before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the expectation, the criticism, have to be there. Of course, if I win, there's more expectations. The standards level up. But that's the thing. Support. We don't know how to support. Not only Mexicans, everywhere in the world. Because it's very good to pay a ticket and say, goal! And then you're missing and you are not one. Boo! Instead of you seeing someone struggle so much and it's like, come on! You can do it. The Si Se Puede in Mexico was very famous. Yeah, now no one say it. The Si Se Puede happens when nothing was happening.
Right.
Si Se Puede es cuando no se puede. So say, Si Se Puede. Yeah. So when you are nailed, even with Tata, with whoever, that's when the support needs to happen. In any part of the world, not only Mexicans.
Right.
And that's something about football that is misinterpreted, you know, because they feel that criticism is the only way to support. And it's not. Support means we may be losing.
Yeah.
I need to support there.
We have to give.
You know, we have a lot of U.S. men's national team players. We've had a couple Mexican national team players as well. But from our perspective, like the U.S., sometimes the supporters can be almost delusional. I think we offer lots of support. And sometimes fans are like, no, we should sort of be critical like the Mexican fans are.
Saying like criticism of the team is what's missing in America.
Yeah. Like that's what's real football culture. But I'm curious because sometimes I have seen some of the interviews and with some of the players where there's real sometimes disappointment in that there isn't that support when they really need it. This is just me sort of guessing. Does it ever get to a point where you get called up and you're like, I don't know if I want to play. Is this a right environment? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I don't know for other players, but I think there's moments for most of the Mexican national team players that we in a certain point, we thought about that. Of course it does. Because what's the upside of this? I'm traveling 12 hours. And then I'm going to play. But then if I don't score a goal and we don't win, everything is bad. But then if I score a goal, 1-0 against Costa Rica is not enough. And even if they won at least 4-0 against Costa Rica, Honduras, El Salvador, whoever you put, Canada, whoever. If it's not 4-0, it's not good enough. So imagine you're already in debt of four goals. So you're losing.
Right?
That's the thing. But now, another thing about expectations, because I want to make it very clear. Without the expectation, you don't push as well. You need to use it in the way. Over here is find the middle ground. The middle ground. You can still tell that I'm a player and you don't like me. That's fine. But in the end, when there's Mexico playing, why you have more fun criticizing or hating than supporting or celebrating?
Right.
Because it's very easy to celebrate, guys. It's very easy. Being a supporter is hard. Being very relegated. That's why the relegation even is fun sometimes, because you are in the fight of, imagine Spurs and West Ham right now. Of course, for one of both, it's going to be one of the worst days. One, it's like if you won the championship, even though you shouldn't.
He's an Everton fan. Teams, remember when they got saved at the end of the season?
But listen to me. Those teams shouldn't be there. They all know. Imagine if the supporters right now empty the stadiums and they don't go.
Right.
No, they're the opposite. They're still believing and betting and supporting that they're going to be safe in the end. And that's something that in Mexico should be there. But that's the thing. We live, unfortunately, it's part of the game. I'm not going to change it. Criticize me or not. But they think that because we get paid pretty well and we have the job that millions want, we shouldn't say the things that we,
that
they should improve too. It's like, I pay you, shut up. And that's something that I don't agree with because it doesn't matter. So when someone say that we are not comfortable with this or these things should be better because we are used to that every single day be judged by millions of people. But in the moment that a football player said whatever about a sport director, a fan or whatever, it's taken wrong.
Yeah.
Because you should shut up with that amount of money and because it's easy and you have your life solved. That's a myth that is very, not only against the players, against the sport.
Yeah.
Because imagine if we have a better, I don't know how to say, like merch still that we have, in the world. But imagine if it's better, everything is going to level up. Everything. In every part of the world, no matter what you tell me.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts because I've never thought about this from a player perspective. But do you know the meme of the Argentinian guy who was watching a game and I guess somebody missed and he's like, have you seen it?
Yeah, of course.
What do you think about when you see that? Because I watch it. I sometimes agree with it because it's easier to agree with.
What about golf players? Now that I'm very into golf.
Okay.
Golf. Nothing moves. They're professionals and still Rory McIlroy wins a Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Two tournaments later, not even top three.
Yeah.
Do you see people shouting at Rory like, you don't deserve to be alive?
No.
I receive that.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's the thing. Because as fans, we pay a ticket. It means I need to be tolerated by anything. Throwing beer, tell you that you're going to die, be even sometimes racist, whatever, because I'm just paying the ticket. And that's the misinterpretation. And I swear I speak in this not because I'm a player. For the sport. If we want the sport to get the better, we better play every better in everything. The responsibility is shared. Now, the majority of it, it's from the football players. And organizations, whatever you want to do it, but football players. That saying that we all are responsible doesn't mean that I'm taking away my responsibility.
Of course not.
That's the thing that people I want to understand. Fans, we are responsible that football is not improving. We don't have so much stars like before. There's so many things, you know? And that's why we don't enjoy things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The sport will be better. Trust me.
Yeah, I love the always the foundational thing is kind of like what's best for the sport. I think it's a healthy philosophy. I mean, last year, we were at an event. Alexis hosted it with Andrea Pirlo.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And somebody in the crowd asked him about Italy and like why they're not doing, they obviously missed another World Cup, right? And he was, and they asked him like, why isn't Italy have like young players that are really, thriving? Mm. And he said, he was like, I think when he asked like, do you see something like improving? He's like, no, because the Serie A and they're focused only on money and winning and they're not really giving these young players chances. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, I sort of asked the same question about Mexico because Mexico doesn't, we obviously have a lot of U.S. players that are playing in Europe and a lot of stuff, but a lot of the Mexican players, even on the national team, a lot of them play in Liga MX.
Yeah.
Is there any conversation or thought, what you think about the bigger picture about, you know, players that can similarly follow in your footsteps and thrive in Europe like you did?
That's the thing. Before I came here, guys, there was a guy who asked me in the event that, you said, do you think it's the player mentality in Mexico and in Latin America? Because there's a lot of Latin American as well to use Mexico or as a stepstone or staying there forever because it gives you a very good life. He said that the Mexican player in general decide to stay there because it's very comfortable, good wages, good life, etc. And I said, yes and no, I'm going to say. Yes and no. Yes, of course, yes. Because of course, it's a good life, good money. Why I need to sacrifice something that is very good? Yes, as a job perspective. This analogy that a lot of football players put you, it's like in your job, you wouldn't go somewhere and stay there where they pay you more and treat you well. Yes, but in football, in their convenience, you need to be loyal. And in your convenience, you shouldn't be loyal. Anyway, that's another conversation. But then we move to the no. And I say, no, you know why? Because if there's a young player that's called 14, 15, that is getting close, and sees so easy to go to Europe, now he knows that he has two options. But now the Mexican player has only one option. Take it,
with your life. It's your life. Yeah. You make a good contract, your family, your dreams. Take it as with your teeth.
Yeah.
So it's a mix of both.
Yeah.
How I'm going to teach you how to go to Europe if I don't give you the opportunity to? Because they, it's incredible. There's players in the MLS that you're doing to send them, for example, in Europe. And some of them, the MLS teams, I see, they sold a player, I don't know, let's say, you know, for $5 million. And I said, I'm saying, nowadays, I mean, still a lot in my point of view. Mm-hmm. I cost seven in that time. So still for me, a plenty of money. But then I say, it's five. Then you see Gilberto Mora from Tijuana. They will not sell him. Sorry, less than 15 million. Yeah. With 15 million, you can get a very good player from La Liga to get to a Premier League already established and already know that he's going to give you something.
You could bring back Veracruz Tiburones for that money.
15! Yeah. And I understand maybe Gilberto, we're not speaking about Gilberto's worth.
No.
He can worth 50 if you want to. The problem is, even for Mexican players, with 15, you go to South America and you get two Brazilians for seven and you get two out of one. Maybe not as good as Gilberto, but they're going to give you, you try them because it costs you less.
Yeah, yeah.
So Gilberto, stop the chance because of the 15. So now what you need to do about being as Gilberto, I'm just speaking out loud, like, I don't know his situation. Maybe you don't sign a contract, they push you. So there's a lot of things there. I'm not saying that now it's the director's responsibility. It's a country thing. Mm-hmm. If you want your country to do better, we all have to improve and be better. All of us, the system, whoever leads the system, and then the steps down there, you know, until the players or to the fans, if you want to call them. So it's a mix of them. It's a mix of them. So now Mexico, it's like I said, not because I was there. Take me out if you want of the equation in the Russia World Cup, even out of me in the equation. It's the best generation ever in Mexico, not because I was there, because it was the first time that you had almost 15 players internationally.
Uh-huh.
15.
Mm-hmm.
And we never reach a 20, 30, 40. Why? Because a Mexican guy who's working, who's trying to play football, 13 years old, that he doesn't have money. How you're going to go and try, make tryouts? Not even in the U.S. if you don't have the money to go to tryouts in the U.S.
Right, of course, yeah.
So don't tell me about that it's a player. No, the player is trying to find a life out of it. Doesn't matter if it's a money life or a passion life. I don't care. Don't judge. They have to take it. And you have one opportunity, you're going to take it with your teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you a question, because the Brazilians are kind of, they're revolting a little bit at the idea of all of their players being in Europe. In fact, the Brazilian idea is like, we don't have Joga Bonita anymore because all of our players are playing in Europe and they're playing in systems.
Yeah.
And they're not getting to be free and mavericks. One, what is, for you, what is the Mexican style of play? And two, is it made better by players playing in Europe?
For me, the Mexican style, I think it's one of the best mixed, let's call, like, style of play. And I'm going to tell you why. Because we have so much passion, grit, and determination that we can be, like, no one can stop us if we want to. We have that work power inside of us. Mm-hmm. That's very inherent in Mexican culture, right? First of all. Then if you go to the technicality, it's not that we are... I mean, of course, we don't have maybe the technicality and the talents of players of like Brazilians, they're called South American kind of. But we are very developed comparing another nationalities. So we have that enough talent to it. Plus the attitude, you have the perfect merch. And as well, we are a culture that we are not used to have very over qualities of physicality, if you know what I mean. You know, we don't have 6'2" all over. It's all the way around. We are more short people. Yeah. And then we figure it out how to play. So we have that thing that is very in our blood. You know, if we can say it. So it's the perfect mix. Now, why we cannot show it to us? Because we don't know how to play in a team. We don't know. That's because we come from a cultural standpoint as well. We don't know. It's just look for yourself. Do the best of yourself. Not because I did it. Sometimes maybe I did it. But I don't believe I was a player like that. It was more of like, I mean, if we win, we all win. But if I just scored 2 goals, well, we lost 4-2.
You're like, I had a good game. I don't know about y'all.
You know what I mean? It's like the Germany. We won 1-0. I didn't score. Even though they assisted, I didn't score. We win 1-0. That's better than maybe have, even though, of course, it's a very amazing thing in my curriculum. Don't get me wrong. It's just to put up a point. But then we go, for example, in the past, in my in the Maracana against Italy in a Confederations Cup game, the first one in the Maracana full, I score a penalty against Buffon, amazing for my, let's say, curriculum, but we lost 2-1. But it does help. People don't understand that I will change some of my goals for trophies for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 100%, they don't realize that I will. I take it because, okay, we lose. What's the best part of that we lose? Of course, that I score a goal, even though we lose. Of course, it's the best, it's the bright inside of a bad scenario. But I wouldn't exchange that to play 90 minutes, win, and beat Italy. And then the next game, we beat whoever, and then we go there, and then we win. Like, the improvement of the country, no matter if my own goals are not there.
Yeah. I mean, I love hearing, I mean, this is like a dream for us. I mean, hearing you talk like this, and you know,
I can't wait for you to analyze games on Fox. No, this is gonna be great.
But you, you know, you
let's
are.
Let's see if I can do it like this. Of course, here is a period that I don't have the time. Yeah. The game I can stay
know,
here.
Said,
you know,
I've said this a lot for years. I you know, we're not sort of kind of blowing smoke. I mean, we like love Chicharito. No, I mean, yeah. You are. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, man. No, you I appreciate it.
A huge personality, and
you put respect on CONCACAF in Europe, and that's something that is very
thank
difficult.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I'm curious. I don't know if you want to talk about it, because I think that this is a bigger picture. But I'm just curiosity, because the last like couple years, the on social media, you did the like. Doing those videos like Interesante and the whole thing. And I'm curious about the, you know, you are a passionate person and very impactful. And some people weren't fans of that. They didn't enjoy it. But you, hearing you talk and not only just to describe the game, but like the emotional connection to the game, to your national team, to your teammates, it's clear. Like you carry this, I mean, it's on you. You wear your emotions on your sleeve. So I'm curious about that time and the responses to that, and like what made you want to do that?
How do I start this answer? Because it's a very long one.
I can imagine.
I love it. But it's I'm gonna start like this, because I being judged by what I do. And that's okay. It gave me a life, and I'm going to be forever grateful. Without that, I wouldn't be here. Don't get me wrong. But that, it's like in an unwritten rules of fame and football, it means that you need to sacrifice who you are, and you are not a human anymore.
Okay.
That's why. Got it. It was like, I'm going to be a football player forever, like my grandfather teach me. You are always going to be a football player. You just stop playing because no one wants you.
Yeah.
If a club comes and gives you $5 million per year and you are 60, you will take
you're
it.
You're going to take that money.
Of course, why not?
Guy in Japan that's so doing exactly that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, if you still... I mean, it doesn't matter, right? So it's not right. About that. But anyway, it's because of that. It's because of that. It's because... no, because
the editing is happening in real time.
Exactly. That's why I enjoy it, because it's like I step lines that I don't know if I'm gonna keep going or not.
You just heard
right?
The ref blow the whistle. Oh, was that offside? I was almost offside there, huh?
Yeah. I still believe in humanity, and I believe even though the technology it's connecting us more than ever, is disconnecting us in so many things that we haven't seen. And I felt that disconnection inside myself since a long period of time. So now I decide to be Javier first, and then Chicharito's coming second, and then no matter what. And they will say, how convenient is, because in the end of your career, you start realizing this. And I tell them, you don't understand this. I overachieved more than my own expectations, and I still feel the same way as before I reached them. Yeah. And no one teach me how to manage money, how to manage my emotions, how to be a householder already when you're 21, how you need to be an adult at 18 and 19. Yeah. And they expect Bukayo Saka to be like Thierry Henry, and he's 23. Like, they're kids, guys. They don't understand. They're kids. Like literally kids.
Yeah.
Just because they do something so easy and we are amazed by doing them, we need to treat them in that way. And that's why I decided. Because I believe there's so many... I don't know. I would have loved to see a reference like me, very successful and knowing about the sport and caring a lot more about the human side when I was a young guy.
That's fair.
I would love to do that.
Who was your idol growing up?
Ronaldo Phenomeno. No, Ronaldo Phenomeno. No, Hugo Sanchez, of course. But with Hugo Sanchez, the situation, he was more of videos rather than watching him
you
live.
See him,
I couldn't see him in his peak. I see him a little bit when he went back to Mexico. Then I think he went back to Spain. But I was still
scored,
very young.
38 goals with one touch?
Guys.
At Real Madrid?
Not only that. I would love to have a podcast just about him. But let me put this in perspective. Look. Hugo Sanchez did things that not even the best European strikers ever have done that. And we don't know that in perspective. That's it. That's data. That's fact. Right, that's not an opinion. That's fact. Now if you want to debate which opinion, that's another conversation. He did things that not even top strikers in the world can't and haven't done yet. The only guy who's above him in Real Madrid is just one guy.
Yeah.
And it's called Cristiano Ronaldo.
Cristiano
Ronaldo. So imagine.
Yeah.
We don't. Yeah, that's the
thing. He won the Pichichi by only scoring with one touch every goal.
One touch every goal, and then he has five Pichichis.
That's crazy. Five Pichichis is nuts. For a Mexican, too, which is just, you didn't see that in that era.
But that's the problem. If we see that, we cannot even value that. Where we are. That speaks more about where we are. You know, one of the greatest of the greatest of the greatest, and we treat him like...
And the fans in Mexico would have booed him if he didn't
score. Exactly. And we even have people that look, I'm not going to attack them. I love your support. But they kept saying, no, I prefer Chicharito than Hugo Sanchez. Yeah, you prefer me because of emotions. But the real fact is that Hugo is Hugo.
Yeah.
That's what we need to learn, how to even put in perspective your favorite club. For example, of course, you know, Manchester United is my favorite club.
Yeah.
I don't need to criticize you to level up my team. Respect to you.
Right.
The corner kick team, right?
Yeah. You didn't have to do it. You didn't have to do it.
Wait, I'm gonna be in your side.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it right
now. I don't give an F if I won a f***ing Premier League with only corner kicks. Yeah. Try and do it.
Yeah.
I'm always a believer of like the guys who, for me, criticizing is one thing. Hating is another thing.
Yeah, of course.
And we are there. Because criticizing, what I'm criticizing? How you won, but you won.
Yeah.
I don't need to. Why am I going to criticize this if you won?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
And now even if you won or you don't win, or you don't win the Champions League, you got to the final of the Champions League.
Yeah.
So all the criticizers were wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. But what do you see them going out and saying, I was wrong? No.
Of course not. No, and no. I hope we win on a corner kick.
Tell Real Madrid.
Arsenal did it with corner. Chicharito did it by kicking the ball off his face.
Exactly.
And then scoring a goal.
And it works.
When football changed, that the goals start valuing differently, like in basketball, because of how they look, now we have the conversation. I don't give an F.
Yeah.
Put the ball in the back of the net without your hands. That's so, it. Do it whatever.
The football needs a 3-point line, says Chicharito.
Right, well, at least a 2-point liner.
Look,
outside the goal.
We talk a lot MLS. You don't have to answer this, but when you played at LA Galaxy and they kept sending you crosses for you to head, did you want to remind them, like, guys, I'm not that tall. Stop doing this.
And I still scored so many
headers. You did, but it looked frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. But the thing is, I mean, I'm still considering myself a good header, you know?
The situation
is not about headers. It's if you are, look, even Haaland or even whoever, if you are alone in the box, it doesn't matter if you're Zlatan with the head.
Yeah.
When you have more people around the box, then you create spaces. And then the headers become easier. It doesn't matter if you are as tiny as you can be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the goal of Messi against my Manchester United before that in Rome. The way that Messi heads the ball is so difficult, but it was just one defender against one player in the back of Rio Ferdinand, an amazing goal. And Messi is not one of the best headers. Then you put Ronaldo, he's got a lot of headers. But probabilities go higher if you have more players. It's not about how good or bad are you heading.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about probabilities. But anyway, I don't know if I answered your question, but the thing is, not only in El Galaxy, everywhere, you need to know your teammates.
You said enough for us to make a clip out of it. So that's what matters.
If your teammates are good in something, help them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to shine in that way. Because people score, you're going to be
I know happy. You have a question, but Christian right here is the father of a 3-year-old now.
Yeah, he's 3.
A 3-year-old Mateo. If we gave him to you, how long would it take for you to be able to teach him how to do that in the box. You are just a magician at finding space.
I'm so sorry. She needs to be in the queue. I have two of my own. They are there first, and then I'll take the third one. Yeah. No, but I know where you
could
go.
Could you teach that, honestly? Do you think if you sat there with someone, you could actually teach them how to have that instinct of just finding that space and being at the right place at the right time?
Wow. As you can see in my response, I swear I've been giving a lot of thoughts about this with myself of how can I can even maybe comprehend certain things inside myself. And there's things that I cannot explain to you that it was just a split of a second that I just have a feeling that just my body needed to be there. That's it. I don't know how to explain it to you.
Yeah. Even because, you don't know.
Yes, some things know because it was so instinctively. Now, I believe muscle memory goes apart because, and I think the muscle memory like clicks when you practice a lot. And I'm not saying that I practice a lot on training grounds. What I mean practicing a lot is I was looking at a lot of strikers. I always been in love with watching games a lot. So every time that I see a goal, I try at least in my inside of my brain why they did. If, for example, if it was a left foot cross, and depending where, like I analyze everything. So that analysis. Thank you very much. Yeah. Stay maybe inside myself, so it combined with my intuition that maybe a muscle memory with my intuition kicked, and it's just like a feeling of like pulling, and then I just go there.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I just decide moving, for example, and I sometimes. It wasn't even that. It was more lucky because I have a defender. So to take space out of him, I needed to move one time. And if I decided to move there and he follows me up, automatically I needed to stop without even looking where the volley was coming. And then the ball comes there. Man. So I was lucky and then I hit it. Because if I start the other way and he doesn't follow me, I stay behind. But if he follows me, then I move forward. And so for me, the way it was more spaces. I wanted to find spaces, not the ball. I was finding spaces where I think the ball might come. And more in the Premier League because they're taller, bigger, and stronger than me. So how am I going to beat them? Anticipation or just making the space out of it? You know?
I want to spend time talking about that.
You are.
We could talk about Hugo Sanchez for an hour and talk about that for an hour.
I mean, look.
You didn't think you were going to hear Hugo Sanchez. A Cuban and a Dominican talking to you. You didn't think you were going to hear Hugo.
Look, I know that the Chicharito documentary is going to be quite epic at some point.
Yeah,
or the memoir at the very least. But look, we don't say this lightly. I mean, you are just a massive figure, I think, even just for us, but in the game. And it's truly an honor to get to talk to you detail. We met in Minnesota. We maybe spoke for 8-10 minutes, but I know that I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we agree on with just the way we sort of view the world, whether it's but there's something really, I think, unique about
and genuine.
There's something unique about your experiences, what shaped the Chicharito we see today, whether that's positive or negative. But I appreciate you kind of sharing that, even in every answer that you gave us.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, it does mean a lot. No, sinceramente, no, es un honor. De
and
verdad.
I want to add that because, yes, and I don't want to show like very cheesy in this way, but realistically, I feel that I'm not a player that stands out of things that you can compare with. And what I'm going to say is like, and I'm not downgrading myself. It's like, I'm more normal than the elite type of technical overachievement players. So with that saying, it's like, it's possible. It's not that if I did it, everyone can do it, because that's a very false narrative. But what I'm saying is, I did it more because of my qualities inside my body, my brain, and my heart, rather than my actually fit.
Yeah,
right. So that teachable, the instinct, maybe not, but it's teachable, maybe discipline, maybe how to overcome certain things, maybe how to ignore certain things. Things that I think we all can learn. Yes, I think that. So that, not only in football, on soccer, in everywhere in life.
Yeah.
And now more than ever that everyone is talking about everyone's life
that
easy, right?
Yeah.
So thank you very much, because I appreciate it, because I think the character of Chicharito, it's a very aspirational story not because I want the credit about it. I'm trying to even do the opposite, right? I did it with them. I don't want to be even known as Chicharito. I want to be known as Javier because I'm Javier. Yeah. Javier built Chicharito, not the other way around. That's what people think. There's even some interviews, sorry if I go very long, because I'm very intrigued with this subject. There's even people that they say, celebrities with this part of human. What? It's the other way around.
Yeah.
It's this human with this part of celebrity, even though a celebrity could be humongous.
Yeah, of course.
Right? But anyway, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate what you're saying about me. I appreciate it.
No, this is incredible. It's been an honor. And I think I'm pretty good at finding space because my mother chased me with a chunk right there. So
I think quality.
Buddy.
I heard about my uncles and aunts and my mother with my grandmother and that chancla.
Wow. It would turn corners.
The story is true. That my grandmother had a very good aim. You know? And he was like, if you don't hide behind something, it's going
to
hit you.
It goes around.
It's an art.
I heard David Beckham used to watch your grandmother's.
So bend it like abuela.
Bend it like abuela.
Chicha, Javier, it's seriously super cool. I mean, look, I look forward to watching you on Fox and during the broadcast. I can't wait for the arguments with Alexi Lalas. There are going to be plenty of them.
Let's see.
Oh, buddy.
I hope so.
It's going to be good TV.
What I'm looking forward to is you're going to bring us into the mind of the player.
I'm going to try to at least.
You've already done it a little bit here.
Hopefully I can, because that's the thing. It's like, that's why it's a big coincidence that I haven't retired, and that's something that I like, not because I'm going to still playing, because I'm still a current player. So I hope I can give the perspective of as a current player, regardless if I'm retired or not, you know?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And hopefully by the time the World Cup starts, your dry cleaner gets your shirt back to you. And you know what I mean? It's all great.
Javier, un ídolo, de verdad.
Thank you. Muchísimas gracias. Thank you.
Chicharito Hernández, everybody. Thank you so much.
Tottenham and West Ham went into the final day of the Premier League season needing a miracle. But Tottenham are safe while West Ham got relegated. How the hell did this happen and what happens now? And stick around to the end because I'll tell you why Pep Guardiola leaves Manchester City is what I think is the greatest tactical manager of all time, but not the greatest manager of all time. Christian, I did not see it go down this way. I was at the pub watching Arsenal lift the trophy and I thought I was going to get to see a Arsenal treble this year, which is possibly win Champions League, win the Premier League, and Tottenham get relegated. Didn't happen, though.
Did not. Very disappointing for all the Gunners out there. West Ham did their job, right? They win against Leeds, I think 2-0 or 3-0. Tati Castellanos scores a big goal. He got the first goal in the game. I did think Tottenham would eventually stay up, but the gods were forever in their favor, whatever the odds were ever in their favor. This was like sort of a scheduling thing.
What a great image of Roberto De Zerbi getting mugged. What is this?
This is getting choked out by the goalkeeper, Vicario.
It's a hostage situation. Let him leave or he'll shoot. All right.
That's a great photo. But this was obviously the final game for Tottenham was against Everton. And Everton have just been dropping points at a miraculous pace the last few weeks. And they just got into the final game of the season with really nothing to play for. And this was the best case scenario for Tottenham, a team with nothing to play for. They half of the Premier League, so 9 teams in the Premier League, a little less than half, get a European place because of, you know, Arsenal playing the Champions League final, the coefficient, the teams, Aston Villa winning the Europa League, like all the... Everything worked out so that basically everybody in the Premier League is playing in England, playing in Europe. I mean, and look, this is just the Everton just looked toothless. They had Nothing. Everybody was done with the season. They were ready to go home. And so it was a little disappointing from that. And even as an Everton fan, I just want to see them put in good performances. But credit to Tottenham. They did what they had to do. They looked the most confident. I think they kind of looked all year. They didn't look like they were under a team under pressure or worrying about necessarily being relegated. Every play they made, every touch they took, every pass they completed, like, look, they're not a strong team and they have a ton to work on, but they did enough to stay up. And West Ham, you know, they tried, you know, bringing in some players and doing everything they can. It's just it's very disappointing for West Ham. They get relegated, and for the first time since what, 2012, something like that, I remember. But not a I feel bad for Tati Castellanos. I'm happy for Richarlison, obviously former Everton player. But this is it would have been, devastating for the Premier League if Tottenham would have gotten relegated. As funny as it might be, from a business standpoint, it would have been kind of a nightmare. So I know the people in the Premier League front offices are quite happy.
It's not like West Ham have a tiny stadium either, by the way. West Ham play.
Right.
In a massive stadium, so London Stadium. But when I look at it, I think even conversations I've had with friends that are Tottenham fans, I don't know how our producer feels, but there seems to be two factions. Ones that just want the club to stay up no matter what. If you're a Tottenham fan, you want them to stay up. Obviously, you want to stay in the Premier League. You just don't want to be you don't want the embarrassment. You don't want to have to be in the group chats. You don't want to have to talk to your Arsenal friends the year that they win the league and are in the Champions League final and you're getting relegated. I get that. But the other side, and maybe it is smaller, but there's a group of fans that are like, maybe this would have fixed Tottenham. Tottenham clearly have a structural issue. You take a manager like Ange Postecoglou, the first manager to win you a trophy in many, many years, so much so that it became a running joke year after year about Tottenham. He wins you a trophy and you fire the guy the next day, basically. I mean, it's, you know, like there's something wrong with this club where even in moments of success, there's trauma, there's catastrophes happening all around you. There's always something. There's always a banana peel that they're going to slip on. And at the end of the day, like, something needs to be fixed. And I thought Daniel Levy would fix the situation, and it seemingly hasn't. Now, going out and getting Igor Tudor was a massive mistake. Luckily, they got rid of him and brought in De Zerbi in time. I didn't think they did, but it turns out they did. And Roberto De Zerbi has a system that takes a very long time to input. So he must have slimmed it down and really gotten it tight, because it seems like they took on the sort of the juxtaposition of the manager, and they, like you said, they played with confidence. And on the other side, you have West Ham. You know, we've interviewed Anton Ferdinand and a couple West Ham folks, and they always say West Ham is massive. West Ham is massive. And, you know, what exactly does that mean? And it's like the ethos. There's really almost no real meaning. It's just ethos. Well, you might be the most massive club in the Championship now, and you have this massive fan base that you got rid of their famous bowling ground in Upton Park, you know, all the pie makers and everyone selling, you know, programs on little step stools and all the culture of the club. The only thing you brought with you was bubbles, man. It's sad, you know, to go from winning a European trophy, you winning the conference, which was a massive moment for your club. You sell Declan Rice, you suddenly have an extra $100+ million. And you, what do you do with it? So much so that you had to go out and get a former MLS striker to save your season. And had you had him all year, if they had Tati Castellanos all year, they probably wouldn't be getting relegated.
Yeah, but they get relegated with 39 points, which they mentioned it on the broadcast. I think it's the first time a team got relegated with 39 points since like 2011 or something like that. So usually this is getting that many points is kind of usually enough to survive. And look, you see Burnley and Wolves with 22 and 20 points. So it's like statistically, West Ham are not they weren't a terrible team, but three teams got relegated and they just happened to be one of them.
I mean, so it's just, you are a terrible team if you're one of the three worst. That's it. I don't care how many points. I don't care what the goal differential is. I don't care any of those things. If you're one of the three worst, yeah, you could be one point away from the fourth worst.
You got to include Tottenham in that conversation. They are one of the four worst, right? They just made it.
But only the three worst get relegated. And the financial hit that would have meant for Tottenham Now they don't realize that. They get to sort of survive a little bit longer. And, well, you know, they are
West
a very
Ham,
profitable
West
club.
West Ham get to deal with that financial issue. Apparently, I saw, I don't know how true this is, but I saw somebody posted that West Ham going to the championship triggers some sort of tax clause in the, like, area. In West Ham, where the taxpayers themselves have to pay more money because the team got relegated, because there must be some agreement going into that stadium or something like that. So
I'd be rising. I'd be knocking on them players' doors going, yo, I just took a 5,000 pound hit on my tax because of you. Pay up, bro. You need to sell that. Sell that G-Wagon, my G. Yo. And give me 5,000 pounds right now. This isn't a robbery. This is me leveling out my taxes.
Right. This is, yo, Jared Bowen, I know you good for it. Hook me up.
Yeah. Yo, Tati, I know you just got here, my G, but you need to pay up.
Maybe stop spending money on Declan those $10 Rice. Lattes, you know?
Get a coffee machine. We're watching Declan Rice. He's in the tunnel area, kind of where the players, he realizes West Ham goes down and he sort of is frustrated and slaps. He clearly loves his old club, but what a difficult day for him. The day he lifts the Premier League trophy, the reason he went to Arsenal, and, you know, he's the one who famously said, you know, it's not done yet. You know what I mean? It's not over, bro. Like, yeah, we lost at City, but we could still win this thing. And clearly they did. To be the emotional leader of this team, and yet knowing where you came from is struggling, kind of sucks. It's got to suck for Declan Rice.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure it goes away very quickly, but it's got to suck.
As he's drinking champagne from the Premier League trophy. Yeah. Yes.
It's so difficult while getting this massage to think about how much pain all my friends are in.
The other thing in regards to the Premier League, as far as the European places, a huge, what a great opportunity. Sunderland getting a Europa League spot on the last day of the season, beating Chelsea. Chelsea out of any European position. You know,
yeah, they're intense.
They're gonna have their new manager, which some people think it's like a good thing that they're not. They don't have to worry about European football. I don't know. It's still, you know, we know how much they prioritize making money and the business side of it for Bluco and all this other stuff. But Sunderland getting to Europe after, you know, getting into the Premier League. This is their first year. Was this their first year back or second year back? Why am I not remembering?
This is their second year back because they got shocked
second
last
year. Back,
year.
Right? Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Please confirm. I don't know why I don't remember, but I don't remember. But huge for them. I mean, and they had a they were just one of the more consistent first year back. We did confirm.
First year back.
They
that's right, because they got the new kit. Yeah, this is their first year back.
They were so consistent this year, and even you know, this year when we were at the Premier League Fan Fest in Kansas City and in Tampa, without a doubt, Sunderland fans do not make up the majority of the people there, but they show a lot of heart, and they have their group of like a dozen that do their thing. So that it's great to see that they were just not only just consistent, but they gave teams a lot of trouble, and I think their kind of standout player outside, I think signing Granit Xhaka was what a fantastic move.
Huge.
But Brian Brobby was fantastic. What a just a difficult, tough player that gave everybody just a difficult time and made that team better for it. And now they have a European place and going to Europa League. Huge. That's why it's upsetting as an Everton fan. I'm like, we couldn't be one of those. We couldn't get a Conference League. Like, we had a pretty good team.
Bruh, they got Reggie Labrie, a great manager that's very forward-thinking and is changing the way the Premier League plays. You got, like, a 90-year-old dude that's already managed there before. You know what I mean? You ain't going to be one of those, you know what I mean, young upstart clubs, bruh.
Yeah.
Moyes came in to do what Moyes does, which is exactly what you see.
the injury to Jack Grealish, I think, made a huge difference, and that's the difference between the, you know, Everton and Sunderland, and those 4 points that got them to a European spot. I think if maybe Grealish is there, maybe Everton are playing Europe. And then also puts into question is does Grealish go back to City, which I don't think that's going to necessarily be the case. But do Everton want to keep him? Do they want to pay him? Do they want to pay a transfer fee? The whole thing. It puts a lot of that into question. But yeah, Sunderland, obviously very excited
European
about it.
Says, football European for the first time in more than 50 years. That's beautiful.
Good for them. Must be nice, Sunderland.
You mentioned whether Grealish goes back to City. When he does go back, if he does go back, I should say, Pep Guardiola for sure won't be there. I think this is important to talk about because I watched Pep Guardiola give his goodbye speech to the fans. And one of the things he said, no matter how many years it is from now, if you're a Manchester City fan and you see me, come give me a hug. And I have a feeling you're going to regret that maybe about 2 years, 2 years into your retirement, if you retire, because that's a lot of people, bro. But the question started, we started talking about in the bar whether he's the greatest manager of all time. And here's my point. I wonder how you feel about this. Pep Guardiola changed the game of football. Pep Guardiola changed the way people even thought of how to play football. Pep Guardiola created positions and plays and tactics that no one had ever really felt the need to make before or had ever seen before. Pep Guardiola changed the sport. But it's hard for me to think of himself. It's hard for me to think of Pep Guardiola as the greatest manager of all time, as opposed to just the greatest tactical mind of all time, simply because Pep Guardiola has never managed a bad team. He's never made a team better. Sure, he made Bayern better by making them win more consistently. He's never made a mediocre team the best.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And when I think of the job that Mikel Arteta did when he came in, take a club that was floundering, had big names, couldn't put it together, was losing games against some of the easiest clubs in the league, really seemed mediocre, and he got rid of some of the bad seeds, and he look at what he did to them. He made them a better team. Sir Alex Ferguson, when he came in, it took him 5 years to win. Manchester United needed a complete rebuild, essentially, and he goes and does that. He sort of inputs himself, and he takes that, and he finds players that represent who he is. You know, Wenger did the same thing. Arteta does the same thing. Mourinho did the same thing. Pep Guardiola, for the most part, walks into a really good club and makes them really great. Is that enough for you to say he's the greatest manager? Or do you want to see him at least manage a national team or take a team that doesn't have the most money in that league?
Okay, so I personally, I mean, you know, to give the conclusion, he's the greatest manager ever. And because I don't necessarily, I'm not less impressed by a manager who manages a club that has a lot of money, right? Because we see, and a good example, these last 2 years at Real Madrid, good, lots of good players, lots of money, still doesn't work out, right? They still have their issues and can't beat the teams with less money and less resources and stuff like that. And Pep Guardiola has managed to, yes, he gets great players, but he's not necessarily building a Real Madrid, right? He still also can help young players thrive. Like, look at Nico Reilly. Nico Reilly is not, before he started playing at City, you wouldn't have never heard of him, and if he went anywhere else to play, I don't think this would be the outcome that we have right now.
Most managers aren't asking their fullbacks or center backs to make late runs and to be in the box. So yeah, it's a short list of clubs he could have gone to do that.
He can identify what players work in the system that he has, and it's intricate and it's complicated. But every player that plays seems to thrive in it. And when you know, if he has faith in them, I mean, it's like players that you don't necessarily look. And Jack Grealish, I think, is a good example of like the way he played at City is not the way he plays at Everton. Right. And at City, he's not necessarily holding the ball a lot or dribbling a whole bunch. And he is a piece in that system. And it worked well when it worked well, and when it didn't, it didn't. But Pep is just a a psychopath when it comes to tactically figuring out how this stuff works. And
I said he's the greatest tactical mind of all time. But if Pep Guardiola was the manager of Everton, does Everton win the league?
In a couple years, why not?
I meant this year.
It might take a while. No. I mean, it would. Look, he knows what talent works with him, right? And I mean, because he is obviously leaving City, there's seeing so many conversations of former players. Joe Hart recently was talking about his relationship with Pep, and Pep was straight up like, "Bro, you ain't one of my guys. I don't think you can do it. You're not going to be able to play in the system I have." Joe Hart was like, "Dude, give me an opportunity. I will at least try." Pep was like, "I don't see it. I don't think it's going to work." And now Pep recently said, like, "One of my biggest regrets at City was not giving Joe Hart a chance." But did it work out perfectly fine by not giving him a chance? Yes.
Because they have the money to go out and get Ederson. You know what exactly. I mean? Like, also, the 115 charges doesn't really feel like he had an advantage that other clubs didn't have, being able to play players and pay players and coaches and assistant coaches, you know, outside of the purview of the contract, you know, get all of this additional money. That doesn't put a little asterisk.
It might, but is it his? I mean, look, he didn't do it, right? He is not the one.
You don't know that. We don't know that.
Why would we know? Why would he? He has specifically said, "I'm gonna just believe that he is being truthful." He has said, "If he thinks there's any wrongdoing from Man City's part, that he would leave immediately." He said that. He said that like 3 years ago. So I'm gonna assume he doesn't know. I feel like it would be pretty easy to prove if Pep Guardiola had some involvement in the sponsorship decisions that City Football Group
I don't think it matters. I don't think he was involved, by the way, jokes aside. And I also don't think I also don't think it matters if he was involved or not. Simply by having more access to more ingredients, you have the ability to be a better chef. And that's all I'm simply saying is, for him to be, in my mind, considered the absolute greatest manager of all time, I need to see you perform a miracle. You know what I mean? I need to see you do something exceptional outside of just winning a lot with the biggest, the fastest, the best players that money can buy. And he did that at Barcelona. He did that at Bayern. And he's done that at Manchester City.
He was kind of the greatest manager of all time before he got to City a little bit. So I think some people would make that case.
I think a lot of people would make that case. You're not wrong. But I still would say, like, yo, because he managed Barcelona, you know what I mean? There's other people that would have won at Barcelona. They wouldn't have been able to do what he did. And that's why I'm saying he's the greatest tactical manager. He has changed the game. I'm giving him his flowers. But right, for me right. to say, if, and by the way, he is on the great manager Mount Rushmore. Without a doubt. But is he first? I don't know.
I mean, look, I'm fine putting him first, but I could understand why there would be some blemishes to his record. But if he, like, let's say he's not on the right Mount Rushmore, who are the managers that fit this example of, like, that?
I mean,
he
is on the Mount Rushmore. I just don't know if he's
right,
first.
Right.
I think there are people that would say, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson probably belongs on that list before him. And that's someone who, you know, took his time and changed the club completely.
To me, that's the only name. That's the only name that you can make a case for. But
all right.
But
I think in time we will say Mikel Arteta. But for right now. And by the way, can I just say, as an Arsenal fan, thank God Mikel Arteta won while Pep was still in the league. Thank God he beat Pep, quote unquote, to get his title, because that would have been an asterisk held all over his head. It would have been. Every time people, if they would have waited another year to win and they would have won next year when Pep wasn't there, they would have always said you couldn't do it while Pep was there. So the fact that he did it while Pep was there, I think, is a huge, huge feather in Mikel Arteta's cap. And I think it just goes to show that Mikel Arteta finally figured out how to build a team to beat this guy. He had to create a team that was perfect in all four phases of the game, which is insanely hard to do. He had to go out and get one of the best set-piece managers. He did all this incredible thing and finally put it on. Yes, was it difficult to watch? Yes. Oh, you're boring. I was bored watching a couple of the games.
And they also
Who cares?
Lost
you know what? I'm
City.
Not going to be bored.
They also lost to them.
I don't care.
They beat other... City also lost to Bournemouth and Tottenham. So, you know what I mean? Yes. It's all relative. All I care about is next week when I'm in London at this parade, I'm not going to be thinking about, oh, well, some of those games are boring. I'm going to be thinking about, who just handed me another glass of champagne? This is crazy.
Okay, well, congrats to Arsenal, obviously, winning the Premier League. You know, congrats to even Tottenham for staying up. You feel bad for West Ham specifically. It's a bummer. You know, don't clap for that.
I was talking for Tottenham. West Ham.
You got a proper fa for West Ham. hopefully they're back in the Premier League soon. We got a bunch of West Ham friends, so it's, I know it's obviously a difficult day for them. But yeah, man. Fun Premier League season. We got at least some for me. At least somebody besides City won it, so I'm clapping for that.
Have you texted Jamie, our old editor?
Not yet. I got it.
Me neither. I'm kind of worried. I'm like, I know he pissed, and I know he don't want to hear from me. So I'm gonna let you do it first.
All right, let's wrap up there. Holy smokes, Chicharito. Thank you so much for coming through. what a wild life we are living.
I want to say hello to all the Mexican news media people hearing about our show for the first time. Hitting Google Translate. Perdóname porque hablamos español también, but we did the interview in English. Hit our DMs, guys. We know how to speak Spanish.
I'm already expecting a wave of us being quote tweeted quite a bit. But let's go. That's what Chicharito brings. That's why Fox hired him. And the fact that he was able to bring some of that smoke on the Cooligans is, we appreciate it. Thank you so much, Chicha.
Hey, he brought the energy. But,
yeah, without a doubt. So shout out to thank you of the people at Fox Sports for bringing him by, and obviously we're looking forward to the World Cup. And again, be on the lookout. We got big news coming too. We can't just announce it yet, but the World Cup is going to be the Cooligans is where you want to be locked in across a bunch of channels on Yahoo Sports.
You know what? Screw it. Let's announce it. I'm gonna announce it right now. We're going to become Chicharito stylists. Now, I know that it sounds insane, but again, it's a low bar.
But this role, this opportunity was calling for us, okay? We needed to step up right now and do this. As always, make sure you follow us across all socials, at Soccer Cooligans. If you're watching this on YouTube or anywhere, just hit like on YouTube, hit subscribe to the Cooligans on our YouTube channel. Like I said, we're going to be doing a lot of fun stuff during the World Cup, and you got to stay locked in. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Again, shout out to Chicharito for joining us. I will be back on sometime this week. We're going to be doing a lot of wild episodes this week, so we'll just stay locked thing, because we're going to be doing a lot of stuff. All right, we'll see you.
You know what?
The
easiest way to know when we have a new episode is click that little bell button on YouTube. It tells you exactly when we have something else. Hit subscribe on all your podcast catchers, and you'll know exactly when we up next, because we're going to be all up in your ears or in your eyes. That's exactly where we want to be. Love you guys.